This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 23rd, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter. As we have every casual Friday. Also this week, giving us movie recommendations, best-selling author Isabel Gillies, and more. But first, before we get into that, I got an email about the Trayvon Martin case, and the emailer makes, well, only one good point, and I will talk about this in the better half of the program. We may very well have a bunch more libertarians call in. I know this is fairly controversial because people are getting sick of hearing these people not being able to make any sense. And I am in a slightly irritable mood today. So we may not be taking as many calls from libertarians today. But first, this is just stunning. Now, first off, well, let's play this clip. First off, let me say this. I, as a general rule, have never felt comfortable opining on the guilt or innocence of someone who is involved in some type of legal trial. I don't like to litigate those from afar. I didn't follow the O.J. Simpson thing at all. The legal system is fairly dysfunctional at times. I just think you need to be sitting in a courtroom and you need to be a juror to make those decisions. And the other day I did say that it sounded like to me that this guy Zimmerman murdered Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin. And I don't know. We don't really know, and this will be taken, hopefully, it will be taken to court. Sure sounded like to me, but the bigger issues, and we're going to talk about this with Cliff, the bigger issues, in my estimation, the ones that we can talk about are the policy of this stand your ground thing and the behavior of the police department. In both instances, I think I think it's a reprehensible law, and the actions of the police department were beyond reprehensible. All right, with that said, you have to listen to this clip. Cliff and I will talk about this and more in just a few moments. But listen to this clip from Geraldo Rivera on Fox and Friends just this morning, I guess. Listen to this.
Let's talk about the Trayvon Martin case and what's going on in Florida.
Well, I have a different take, Brian, on that. I believe that George Zimmerman, the overzealous neighborhood watch captain, should be investigated to the fullest extent of the law, and if he is criminally liable, he should be prosecuted. But
now that, I think, is reasonable. That is the most reasonable thing that one could say at this point. There should be a real investigation. I suspect he's going to be found guilty of something. I don't know if it's murder or manslaughter or what it is. That's what I suspect, but we'll see as more facts come out. But then listen to this.
I am urging the parents of black and Latino youngsters particularly to not let their children go out wearing hoodies. I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Stop it for 1 second. The hoodie is as responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as much as George Zimmerman is? So let me get this straight now. It's not guns that kill people. It's not even people that kill people. It's hoodies. It's hoodies that kill people. Just back up just a little bit here, because you have to hear the response from the Fox and Friends people. Go ahead.
What do you mean?
When you see a kid walking, Juliet, when you see a kid walking down the street, particularly a dark-skinned kid like my son Cruz, who I constantly yelled at when he was going out wearing a damn hoodie or those pants around his ankles, take that hood off. People look at you and they what's the instant identification? What's the instant association?
Uh-oh.
It's those crime scene surveillance tapes. Every time you see someone sticking up a 7-Eleven, the kid's wearing a hoodie.
Now, wait a second. We're not supposed to send kids out wearing hoodies in the rain or at any time. You know what else we should not be doing? We should not be sending our kids out as dark skinned like Geraldo's son. I mean, I send my daughter out to school every day. I'll let her wear a hoodie if it's raining, but she's not going out as a black kid or a Hispanic kid because you wear that hoodie when you're black or Hispanic, man. You're just asking for trouble. You're asking to be shot. You're asking society to say, there goes another gangster. There goes somebody who's up to no good. Matt walked in today wearing a hoodie. And I'll tell you, it was this close. This close. I just immediately spun. And if I didn't have that one moment where I didn't happen to have a gun on me, there'd be nobody working the board today. This is unbelievable. The idea that somehow a hoodie is a license for someone to kill you is beyond belief. It's beyond belief. You don't want your kid going out dressed as wearing, you know, there are certain things I tell my daughter, you can't wear that. But it's not because I think she's going to be, she's inviting someone to shoot her. That's just beyond belief. Wow, Geraldo. Wow. You even had the lady from Fox and Friends go, what do you mean? Like, when you're presenting a theory to the Fox and Friends people and they don't get what you're talking about, you know you got a problem. Unbelievable. Let's take a break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter, who I know is going to have a lot more to say on this. The Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles. They're across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. And you, as a listener to The Majority Report, can get a free downloadable book at audiblepodcast.com/Majority Report. Go pick up Rick Perlstein's Nixon Land. It's a great history of how the right wing nut jobs sort of grew over the past 30, 40 years. That's audiblepodcast.com/Majority Report. Pick up your free book now. Why would you not do that?
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schecter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday, but he's never casual in my estimation. It is Cliff Schecter. You can follow him on Twitter at Cliff Schecter or at Cliff Schecter. Cliff Schecter?
Samuel, how are you?
I am doing well. Now, you are, you have been, one of the issues that you've been working on for quite some time is, are handguns and gun laws. And this Stand Your Ground law has come out of this. It's an NRA ALEC written law that is now, I think, in like at least a dozen states across the country. It's just bizarre, and we can see where it leads to.
Yeah, in different forms, even more states, because there's a number of them that some of them say that you can shoot first, you know, in your home, excuse me, but you can't shoot first if you're in this public place, or you can in any public place, but not some other public places. The point of it is that this is a part of what has been, I would call it a cultural assault by the National Rifle Association, and as you pointed out very correctly, ALEC, and the NRA is a big contributor to ALEC. I mean, this is just all lots of corporate money floating around. And the whole point here is really, I think, to erase any historical memory of what kind of country that we were. Essentially, they want to, you know, play up their Wild West, you know, the whole Wild West thing. They want to pretend that we were always a country of everyone taking guns wherever they wanted to. You know, they conveniently forget that when you watch something even like, the old Wyatt Earp story, when people came to the edge of town, they checked their guns. In fact, when the Clantons and the others didn't, we had the OK Corral shootout. That was the reason why. The point is that, you know, to get back to more recently, as of the late 80s, there were only about a dozen and a half around our states or so, 18 states that allowed concealed carry. Now we've got concealed carry in every state but one. Illinois is the only one that does not have it. A couple states now, you know, Kansas allows people to conceal carry in K-12 schools. Think about that for a second. a few other states, Texas, I believe, is one of them. I'm trying to think if it's Utah, allow it on college campuses. 23 states allow concealed carry in bars, including Ohio, the one I'm sitting in, because as we all know, booze and guns go well together.
There's nothing funner than getting wasted and shooting off a couple of rounds. You'd like to wait until you're outside the bar to do it, but if not, I mean, sometimes you just get the urge.
Why not in the bar? I mean, sometimes at night you're sort of thinking, what should I do? Should I smoke some crack cocaine and go dry and go speed my boat into, you know, into oncoming traffic? Or should I go to a bar and start shooting and drinking? These are things I find that all go well together.
There's nothing like going into a bar and playing that deer hunter game and whipping out your own pistol and blowing that entire machine away.
Exactly. It's, you know, I mean, it's not necessarily the best high, but it's close. It's up there with like driving and heroin use. They're all good ways to use their time. So this has been an assault on really, and this is what the right does, as we know. And this is what I, you know, the point I want to make, which I think is so important that I try to make, you know, one of our esteemed listeners who I brought up before, our friend Gaius over at America Blog, wrote a great piece that people should check out on this today. You know, and others have done the same thing, which is to make this connection, which is this is part of the right-wing strategy to, again, when they're trying to take us back to some golden age that really never existed. It's kind of like what they do on taxes. They try to pretend it never used to be like this, where you and I, of course, know that in the 1950s, there was a 91% top tax rate at some point. They don't want anybody to understand that. There's nothing different here. This is the same war by the 1% against the 99%. When it's big pharma, you know, and they're trying to not give people the necessary prescriptions they need and whatever so they can enrich themselves and take away your health care, we scream and yell about that, and we see that the way we should see that. When it's Wall Street and they're selling us bad products that they're betting against themselves – and they're taking away your pension so they can enrich themselves. We understand that. The gun issue, for some reason, hasn't, you know, fully, people haven't fully gotten that understanding, and I've been trying to scream it from the rooftops that this is no different. This is not about the Second Amendment. You have that right, and the Supreme Court, frankly, went a lot further in delivering, you know, in saying that that right isn't even part of being in a militia, which, if you can read well-regulated militia, makes no sense, but I'm not going to get into that. The point is that, you know, even this crazy right-wing Supreme Court said that people had the right, that there is the right to regulate who can get guns, i.e. criminals and whatever, and concealed carry laws, which are what we're talking about here. But you see, so this is not about the Second Amendment. What it is that a number of gun manufacturers, arms dealers really, who run the NRA as a front group, are enriching themselves by killing the hoi polloi, you know what I mean, the riffraff. Me and you, the rest of it. It's, again, it's no different than the way we look at 99% versus 1% on other issues.
Well, and of course, the electoral value in this. I mean, you could see it from day one of the Obama administration, this notion they're coming to take your guns away. I mean, just think about the gulf between the idea of a right to carry a gun or right to own a gun and the idea that you have the right to shoot someone.
Because they look different.
Because they look different, or that you have unilaterally determined that you feel threatened, and you know that's what's going on in this situation. I had an emailer who sent me an email saying, like, you know, if I had seen a suspicious looking guy by my car, and this guy seems to have a slightly different set of facts than have come out, but even if I take his facts as they are. We know that Zimmerman here followed this guy. We know that the cops knew that he followed this guy. We know right. that Zimmerman knew the cops were on the way. We know that this guy just took it upon himself because he thought there was a rash of burglaries around. He decided this guy was a criminal, and he wanted to be some type of superhero. And it ended up with this kid who was completely innocent shot. And beyond that, the implications of this law are that you have the cops who let this guy just walk away with his gun. I mean, it's just stunning.
Well, that's the whole thing. See, this work, the NRA, usually they come out and they try to change the subject. I mean, they've done a little bit of that here, but this one is so clear cut. You know, when Gabby Giffords was shot, it was a crazy guy. You know, they of course won't admit the fact that it was a guy that the military had rejected because of drug use and because of mental issues, and that should have been in a database so that he wouldn't have been sold a gun. But at least they can try to deflect here. But see, here, this actually worked out the way it was supposed to work out. They want to deny that now, but a white guy in his gated community saw somebody that looked different that shouldn't have been inside of his big gate in his wealthy community walking around. Somebody different, somebody poor, somebody who's a minority, somebody who's part of the 99%, to put it plainly. And he got scared. And when you're a privileged white guy and you get scared to the NRA and to these guys, you have the right to just shoot somebody else because they may be a threat to you. And I mean, that is what this is about. That's at its core. At its core, the NRA and ALEC are racist. All right. They are. It's not a shock. I mean, the organization that should shock anybody, the organization that pushed these bills, ALEC, is the same one that has pushed all the bills around the country to suppress votes. Geez, who are they going after there? The same guys that are pushing tort reform everywhere, which every study will show you hurts poorer and minorities because they can't get in a court of law when they're hurt by a big corporation. There's a rhyme and reason to this. And I just, it's so important to me, you know, as someone who's worked on this issue, to make sure people understand, you know, how this needs to be seen, that this is part of this larger battle we're all fighting. Are people going to be able to essentially say, I'm going to get my taxes cut, I'm going to be able to you know, not worry about anybody else, go live in my gated community away from everybody else, and anytime somebody suspicious shows up because I'm a white dude of privilege, I'm going to shoot them and the state's going to protect that?
Well, I mean, look, you know, in this case, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Zimmerman was necessarily white or necessarily privileged. I mean, I think there is the broader thematic issue here. You know, look, I mean, it's clearly Zimmerman is racist in the way that he is functioning here. There's no doubt about
right.
it. You cannot. The idea that he immediately goes from black kid wearing hoodie to I'm going to chase this guy down. I mean, you know, never mind the idea that he's you know calling it into the cops, but I'm going to chase this guy down with a you know carrying my pistol is the racist point there. The way that they've sold these laws has undoubtedly no doubt used race as an element in this. But you're right.
Well, you brought it up earlier. That's an important. I mean, the whole Obama's going to take my guns, and you know they've played into this fear of Obama. And they've Wayne LaPierre, the president of a major organization that you would think, you know, might act in a respectful manner because of that. Oh, Obama is a communist, has been communist trained. Obama, you know, and he makes sure to throw out Obama and Kenyon in the same sentence and the rest of that. They're playing on the race of, obviously, of the president, that he's going to come take your guns, like all those scary black people that are going to come and break into your house, so you better protect yourself and assault you on the streets wherever you go, so you better be ready to shoot first if you have to. You know, meanwhile, President Obama, the only things he's done related to guns are passing bills that now allow you to carry guns in national parks and pack them in your luggage on Amtrak. He has expanded gun rights, actually.
And here's the interesting thing, you know, and it never occurred to me until I ended up going down to one of those Glenn Beck rallies, an 828 rally. There was two types of people there. There were these fundamentalists who were basically pushing for the Bible to replace the Constitution. And then there was a group of, you know, sort of the hardcore Tea Partiers. And when they say Obama's coming to take the gun, it's not just a question of like, oh, he's one of those typical namby-pamby liberals who doesn't believe in gun rights. No, you got to follow the narrative out there. Why is he coming to take our guns? Well, of course he's coming to take our guns because when he tries to turn this country into a communist state by importing all these Kenyan ideas into it, we're not going to have the ability to fight back. That's the mentality. I mean, I spoke to at least three or four guys, five or six out of maybe the 40 I interviewed, you know, 10-11% ratio. I'm picking people out at random, and they're telling me the same scenario. Like, I'm not going to be honest. I can't be totally honest with you. We know we're waiting for, but all I'm saying is get that freeze-dried food and make sure you're loaded to bear. I mean, because this is all part of the way they sell this narrative. And if you
– That is. I've been at those rallies. Well, go ahead.
Push the narrative – beyond a right to carry arms, a right to have a gun to go hunting, all the way to you have a right to shoot somebody, to stand your ground, to not do everything in your power not to shoot somebody, but on the contrary, that you have a greater, broader license to shoot someone. That's what that means. It just means that your standard of responsibility when you're involved in any type of conflict is less. You have the ability to whip out that gun earlier in that confrontation, and this is what you get. This is what you get.
No, and again, it doesn't – see, you brought up the point before about Zimmerman. Whether he's privileged doesn't matter. His parents had a place in that gay community, and whether he's white doesn't matter in the end. What matters is the overall thematic, and that's what you brought up earlier. Again, it's about the fact that if in your gay community, in your wealthier neighborhood, wherever, if somebody shows up there that looks suspicious to you, and you know, but believe me, and you know this too, Sam, that if I show up somewhere, or you show up somewhere, anybody shows up somewhere, you know, that is a completely different situation than this one. If you're dealing with an African American community and someone were to shoot first, somebody in the African American community wouldn't be able to use this defense. They'd be in prison immediately, and you know how that would work. This is written for very specific people. All right, and that's the whole thing here, is that the specifics of who George Zimmerman is doesn't really matter. The specifics of they are saying two things. One, that we're going to give back your rights. That's the way they always frame it. The rights have been taken away from you, of you to defend yourself from. And they're talking to white people. They're using coded language, and they're talking about those black people and those poor people and those scummy hippies and whatever. I mean, it's pretty simple. The second thing is, again, you know, remember, this is an economic issue. I know it's considered a social issue. People talk about it alongside social issues. But it is an economic issue. It is wealthy gazillionaires who make money off of selling weapons that kill people. The more weapons they sell, that they're able to sell, the richer they will get. It is just that simple. So there's no rhyme or reason why they would be against a background check to stop criminals from getting guns unless it meant fewer people would buy guns and they'd make less money. I need someone else to explain to me why else they would be against that. And I think that that's such an important part of all this. So that's why you know, I've tried to sort of sit there and sort of, you know, connect the dots on this, that this is just part of the same thing that we are all fighting right now. You know, the same battle again. Are there going to be people that, for all intents and purposes, can separate themselves away from the rest of society, have no responsibility because they're so wealthy and they're, you know, and in their own areas and whatever, and then if we even look at them the wrong way, they can shoot the rest of us? Is that the kind of society we want to live in?
It's stunning. And again, you know, sort of the racial element as well. You know, we hear we just played that clip of Geraldo Rivera saying that, you know, you can't if you're a young black or Latino kid, you can't go out wearing a hoodie. You're inviting this type of thing. I mean, just for a moment, I want folks to think about that. Think about the notion that, you know, look, we all put on our clothes every day and we contemplate how, you know, what image are we projecting out there? Some of us less than others, much to our detriment. But be that as it may, we do that. The idea that you have to put your clothes on with the burden of, hey, am I inviting someone to shoot me if I wear this clothes? I you know, it's like there are moments where I just like I can't. I just the idea of having to go through my childhood life, everything else being equal, and to have to think about that notion and that burden is on me rather than on something in society, it's just unbelievable. I just don't know how I really sometimes I'm just amazed that, you know, that kids who are supposedly walking around with that burden or should have that burden on them can even function in society at all. You know,
the worst thing that you have to worry about, Sam, is that you may look too Jewy to the Ron Paul crowd.
Well, that happens. That happens. I mean, sometimes that's unavoidable to any crowd. But let's turn to some other issues of finance. We just have five or six more minutes here. But I want to talk about the budget that came out this week, Paul Ryan's. And, you know, the amazing thing about this is that you know, there was another budget that was released this week, just like last time this year, probably every time this year, that doesn't get any play. Of course, I'm talking about the progressive budget. We never hear a word about the progressive caucus budget that's come out.
The fact that Paul Ryan can get up and again, you know, still gets considered in the beltway as this serious guy and the rest of it just shows how far we've wandered from sanity.
I think
that budget is so utterly insane. It is so radical. It is ridiculous. And if we're put if it were enacted, what it would do, how it would devastate this country, how it would lead us to on the fast train to third world status would be just amazing.
I noticed is that I think there was a little bit more of the establishment media, I think, is taking this guy a little bit less seriously, at least in the short run, because the numbers simply don't add up on his budget. I mean, nakedly so. His budget is a joke. And hopefully that follows him. But, you know, I really think when you look at a budget like this, that is so clearly not a serious document. And, you know, I don't like using that word because it's, you know, that notion of seriousness. But it's just not an empirical document in any fashion, that it just looks like this guy's running for 2016. I mean, that, you know, the idea that he's willing to push this thing in the run up to an election signals to me that he knows that Mitt Romney's not going to win, that he's running for 2016. And by 2016, people are going to forget that he was a huckster. They're just going to remember this guy's a true blue conservative.
That's exactly right. I mean, in the end, that's all he cares about is it's all about image and whatever and setting himself up as a conservative intellectual, which again, I think, was it Paul Krugman who said, you know, tells you all you need to know about the right, that they view this guy as a smart guy. I mean, you know, it's whatever. I don't even know what else to say about it. It's just a joke, and it really even shouldn't be debated or talked about. It's a stupid document. It has nothing to do, talking about it, wandering away from American values. You know, it has nothing to do with the values that we do hold dear. It's just in the current situation this country's in right now economically, to release a piece of junk like that is beyond obnoxious. So, you know, I'm not sure what else to say about it.
Well, and let me ask you about this too. I don't know if you saw that Washington. I know you were on vacation last week. Sometimes it's tough to, but we saw that Washington Post piece came out this week about just how far President Obama was willing to go. Now, we've known this. We've talked about President Obama put Social Security on the table. He put Medicare on the table. But it wasn't just on the table. I mean, there were specific cuts that were outlined. There was an offer from Bonaire to provide $800 billion in new revenues, which turned out to be even sort of ephemeral in and of himself. I mean, those $800 billion in new revenues were more like supposedly tax cuts in not tax cuts, but we're closing loopholes, which, of course, get melt away. But it was also based on projections of, you know, the Laffer curve. The lower we drop taxes, the more revenue is going to come in. And that's what accounted for a bunch of that $800 billion revenue. So we have President Obama now, and it's quite clear that he was willing to sell out liberalism. And Jonathan Chait says this. And if Jonathan Chait is the guy who's saying that liberalism is in danger by this president, you know you've got a problem.
Jonathan Chait makes you look like Che Guevara.
Exactly. And not just the stubble and but like literally going through the jungle where I that's just not me. Do you think that we're going to see I think there's a big chance during the lame duck session they're going to try and ram this through. I'm not sure. But do you think that we're going to see President Obama in any way sort of be in a position to use this Ryan document to run against? Or is it – in other words, you know, you got this Mitch – I want to talk about this Etch-a-Sketch thing too. And
yeah, we got to get to that because it's too much fun. That's the fun part of the segment.
They're combined here because I don't think, you know, my fear is that the Obama campaign and the Democrats are going to run against Romney as a flip flopper, as really having no core. That's all well and good, but I also want to know what the message is from the Democrats. Like, what are they going to do proactively? What is their vision for the country? And it just seems to me it's rather muddled when you're talking about cutting Social Security and Medicare.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the truth is that they've been running a very effective campaign in terms of pointing out what a joke, and again, with a lack of any core, any even sort of real beliefs that Mitt Romney has, and I would give him credit on that, except for the fact that Romney does kind of make it easy. He and his people with the unbelievable things that they all find themselves saying every week and doing. But it's true. I mean, look, if you ask me right now what Obama's message is, I don't know what it is. I mean, if you said to me, what is he saying he's going to do in the next 4 years? I don't know. I don't know what he's saying he's going to do in the next 4 years. That's a problem. Because, again, he's still, again, after everything that we've been through with these guys proving themselves, you know, that the House of Representatives is literally filled with a collection of lunatics that were elected in 2010. They're not even to be taken seriously in any way, shape, or form. They're not governing. They're not people that are governing. They're not people that really care about the act of governing. So when you get to that, I just don't understand this obsession with the grand bargain. I don't get it. I don't know. I mean, it may be a legacy thing where he thinks he's going to be remembered in some sort of a way. But, you know, if you're willing to right now to contrast yourself with Mitt Romney, you know, he's in the position right now where even after, let's call it some pretty rough times and some self-enforced errors by the Obama team, they could destroy this guy, you know. And I'm not saying, again, things change, and I don't think the election's going to be, you know, it's not going to be a walk or a joke. But it could end up being a Clinton, you know, Dole in 96 kind of election. If Obama, certainly if Romney keeps making all the mistakes he's making. But, you know, if they won't give a clear vision, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there, people on the left, people in the center, people all over the place, who are going to say, yeah, why am I voting for Obama again? I mean, you know, what are the principles? What is it that can't be touched? What is it that you stand strong for? You know, and I don't know what that is. I mean, if you're willing to put Social Security and Medicare on the cutting block, then you know what I mean? It's sort of like, well, what's left for me to think then that you won't put on the cutting block?
I mean, it sort of leaves us in that same place of you know, the Washington Post story made it sound like there was a healthy dose of political naivete involved in this. And that's very possible. But there's also a sort of you can't be naive as to thinking, let me see if I can articulate this. The naivete is that they could make a deal with the Republicans. But what is not naivete, what is still an ideological, because it's ideological, because there is no, there's really no sort of calculation you can make that these moves are necessarily good economic moves for the country. The naivete may be that they could have made a deal with the Republicans and that it would be politically expedient for them to do so. That may be the naivete. But at the core, you also, when you make that political decision, you also have to look into your sort of your ideological or your I guess bag and say, like, what in here am I not willing to touch? And if you're willing to say, like, well, we can have 10%, 12%, 15%, 18%, 20% cuts in Social Security to prevent the idea, if we do nothing at all, 22% cuts in Social Security 25 years down the line, then that's where your ideological anchor is. And that's not going to change. And the only way that that can be avoided from the perspective of people who don't want that outcome is to hope that the context in which they make those decisions is different. In other words, maybe they have the political savvy now to realize they can't make a deal with the Republicans, but there's no reason to believe that after the election, Obama's not going to think again. You'll remember in 2010, he said, now the Republicans have the responsibility. Now they're going to shape up. Right now that they
I don't think they'd ever put the full faith and credit of the United States in danger by standing up on the debt ceiling.
No, that would be a suicide mission. There's no reason for them to think, okay, now that I've won my second term, the Republicans will now understand that they do this, and let's put Social Security and Medicare back on the table again. And hopefully we just have to pray that the Republicans do not come to their senses and take that deal.
Well, that's it. I mean, and they won't. So at least we know that the people that will protect us, ironically, from this deal are the Republicans.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you raise like $1 in taxes on anybody making over $1 million a year, they freak. You know, but again, from a standpoint of people that I think should have learned something from the last couple of years, I don't get why you don't understand that, first of all, standing up strong is not only going to, you know, on Social Security and Medicare, you know, let's separate it policy-wise and political-wise. Policy-wise, again, two of the most successful anti-poverty programs in the history of the world. And Social Security is the biggest social insurance program for children, which a lot of people don't know. I mean, kids, you know, parents die and other things happen, are taken care of by Social Security checks. Spouses are. I mean, it's a huge safety net, not just for the person who's earning it. So that's I mean, these are important things for people to know. But policy-wise, you know, it's hugely important. It is a huge and most important part of our safety net, and it's something that's necessary. All right, but on the flip side of it, politically, I just don't get how you don't look at the situation and say, you know, there's a lot of voters over 65, even really over 55, over 60, and they tend to be more susceptible to some, you know, especially older white voters, to some of these appeals that the right will throw at them, right wing populist appeals.
Well, the Obama knew this going into the Iowa primaries. I mean, that's why he was talking about Social Security crisis at that time. I didn't like that language, but it was his way of saying, I'm the only one who's talking about Social Security. So he knows the political value of Social Security.
Because they're a swing group. I mean, in the end, people, whites over 65, they can be, you know, the anti-gay marriage and stuff, the anti-choice stuff, the nuttiness on the right, and certainly in some rural parts of the country, are very attractive. But what might keep people, those guys in your coalition, is these core economic social safety net issues. And I just don't get, every poll shows that it's really not tough to understand. Even I think I pointed this out in your show maybe a month and a half ago. I mean, Jesus, I mean, a poll showed that 76% of self-described Tea Party members don't want anybody taking away their Social Security.
Right.
The rest of us are north of that. So I don't really get that this, you know, is it to make the certain Beltway media people happy? Is it to, I mean, it makes no sense to me politically. None.
I think it's just a reflection of their beliefs.
Which is just sad and a shame.
Yes.
Because if they don't get that, they don't get how important that was to realigning this country along a progressive vision with FDR. They don't get how important that's been to millions upon millions upon millions of people in keeping them out of poverty and keeping them above, you know, the poverty line so that maybe they even can go out and work, you know, those who are younger who lost family or whatever can get by and then go out and get a job and do these and earn a living and the rest. I mean, it protects the elderly, it protects younger people, it protects really everybody. And it's just insanity to me that you'd want to screw with that. That's what stupid Republicans do. All right, they try, you know, they I love they attack social experiments. They're the ones who try the social experimentation of, yeah, let's just cut off all the money going to the elderly. Let's see what happens.
Exactly.
But that's a very, you know, I mean, this is not something that we know what works. We're a party that believes in science. We're a party that believes in, you know, in statistics. We believe in, you know, we think that things 2 and 2 equals 4. Not 2 and 2 equals, you know, whatever God said to me yesterday about running for office. And
I've had this conversation about every day this week with a libertarian in the better half of the program. But Cliff, we have run out of time, sadly. So we'll have to pick this up again next week.
Sammy, it is always my pleasure.
The pleasure is all mine, sir. See you next week.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Isabel Gillies, who will give me a movie recommendation for this week. Not that I get too much time to watch any movies, but yeah. We'll be right back after this. Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. And on the phone, ladies and gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to welcome back to this program Isabel Gillies, New York Times bestselling author of It Happens, not It, Just Happens Every Day, A Year and 6 Seconds. And you're working on a teen novel, is that right?
I can't even hear you over this music.
Oh, sorry about that. No, we weren't hearing the music. Matt is wearing a hoodie, and so, of course, he's, you know how that goes.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah. So you're writing a teen novel, is that right?
Yeah, a YA, young adult.
Nice.
Novel.
YA novel. Yeah, I read those all the time.
I actually read a great one the other day. It was you'd love it, actually. In fact, anybody would love it. Should I do a book recommendation, too?
Sure. This is a bonus.
Yeah, bonus. It's called... Oh!
There you go.
That's what I'm talking about. I love that music. Okay. It's called... This is the book one. The Fault in Our Stars by John Green.
All right, so this is a good book also to recommend to your teenage kid, right?
No. Anybody. Go ahead, anybody. Here's who blurbed it. You know, a novel of life and death and people caught in between.
Let's not read the
stars.
Whole blurb.
Okay. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it's for everybody. Yes, it's written for young adults, but it's like, you know, Catcher in the Rye. Is that a young adult novel? But Would you say that only teenagers should read that?
No, I would say everybody should read Catcher in the Rye.
Right, same deal. That's the thing.
Now,
same
let me
deal
ask you
with
this.
The Fault in Our Stars.
Have you been angry this week? Have you been angry since the last time we've talked? Have you gotten angry?
No. No, I have not.
Really?
In fact, I've been very calm this week. Well, first of all, look at the weather, right? So.
Yeah.
But I haven't been angry. I was dealing a little with another issue of worry. Sometimes I worry too much. And so I was looking at the daffodils that were blooming all over New York, and instead of just saying, hey, look at that beautiful yellow jolly daffodil, I was, clenched up and anxious, and it's not April yet, and what is it doing here, and we're in sort of environmental crisis because of the ornamental cherry trees are blooming and the magnolias. It looks like it's April 24th.
It's crazy. You're not the only person saying that. I mean, I know. Walking through the park last night, and I was thinking, wait a second, April showers bring May flowers. It's March 22nd.
Right. I know.
I'm thinking to start my own blog. You're going for a year, right, without losing your temper? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can do it for about 3 hours. I'm going to have to see if I can update my blog, get a blog going where I can go 3 hours without getting angry. My computer's driving me nuts.
My last blog post was about being at Apple because I was at Apple for about 4 days because I had computer issues and I switched over from BlackBerry to iPhone and I needed lots of genius help. And I asked them, I said,
they turn out not so
anger.
Genius, right? Those guys are not
geniuses. No, they're geniuses. They're geniuses. Are you kidding me?
Some of them are smart, but I wouldn't say genius is a huge overstatement with those people.
I know, but there's even experts. I got an expert. He was a pretty big expert, but anger comes out of feeling helpless, right? So I was looking around for 4 days. Literally, I think I was in there for 90 hours. And I asked him, that expert, I was like, are people getting angry? And he said, yes, all day long they're getting furious at themselves, at the experts, at the geniuses. It's just all day long because people feel so helpless because they can't understand their communication.
That's interesting. I had not contemplated that it comes out of helplessness. But when you say that, all I do is throw up my arms at my computer. It freezes up every 15 minutes.
What kind of computer do you have?
Yeah, I got a Mac, but it's old. It's old. Could be time for a new one.
Oh, no, you have to. They don't even. I brought in a 2006 Mac. First of all, the guy identified it like a hawk in my bag from 10 feet away. He was like, oh, that's a GS 2006. And it was so antiquated, they laughed at me. They were like, no, that doesn't even. Nothing. You couldn't even buy anything for it. It's all about keeping.
Yeah, of course. The obsolete.
What's that?
I'm getting harassed by this company. They've been calling me every day. Matt's jaw just dropped. But I don't want to get into that story, or I'm going to get all angry all over again.
And you'll get angry, but
So let's talk about movies. Let's talk about something that was a little bit lighter, a little bit more fun. Last time you were on.
I know. It was a heavy first half hour. I mean, I just tuned in. A lot of heavy stuff.
Yeah, no. I think I'm in a bad mood today.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Daddy-o. Watch out.
Just let's fix that.
Watch it.
Shall we?
I watched The Trip. You recommended The Trip. Steve Coogan's The Trip.
And?
That was great. I really enjoyed it. It was, I was sort of blown away, but I thought it was good.
Well, did you think it was funny? Did you think it was funny when the guy asked if his kid was sick? Would you rather win an Academy Award or have your? Do you remember that? Or have your kid be sick? That was funny.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was funny. I mean, I thought it was funny. I just it was funny. I would recommend.
It wasn't like I Love You, Man.
I don't know if I've ever seen. I mean, it was good. It was subtle. It was my type of comedy, and I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. It didn't.
All right. Well, okay. So.
And I didn't get to the other one. I didn't get to the Pearl Jam documentary.
Pearl Jam. Here's what I'm going to do now. I'm not doing two recommendations because it's my hunch that people only watch one.
Yeah, I think that's
and
true.
And you just said yourself, so I'm not going to do two. I'm just going to do one because also if you do two, it takes away from the oomph of the first one, which I really do want people to see.
Although so marketers will say, like, you got to offer two to make one look like the better deal. But, of course, we're not
really
making any money off this, so screw the marketers.
I know, but hopefully the people that we're recommending the movie will make a little money.
Yeah, I guess. I guess that's fine.
Maybe.
Well, unless they BitTorrent it. Let's not talk about
unless
that.
Unless they... Okay, all right. So, here it is. This is really an A. This is really a good one. It's called My Architect.
My Architect.
My Architect.
That sounds familiar to me. What is that?
Well, first of all, it was nominated for an Academy Award.
I'm not sure what that is.
Academy Awards?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sorry,
the movie thing.
Okay. A little.
Got it.
Yeah. A little something that you can get if they're really good. So this one was nominated. It came out in 2003. It was made by Nathaniel Kahn, who is the illegitimate son of his father, Louis Kahn, who was one of the world's great architects. And Louis Kahn had an incredibly interesting life, was an immigrant. He got burned very badly as a child. So he was 5'6". He was disfigured, and very brilliant, and went to and became an architect. And I love this movie so much. There's so many layers to it that
it leaves you speechless.
It kind of does. He was found dead in Penn Station of a heart attack when he was in his 70s, maybe. It turns out the guy had three different families.
What?
So this is his illegitimate son, Nathaniel, and he goes on a search to find out who his father was, because it was such a mystery, this death. And his father, I mean, he is the architect of the Stock Institute, Bangladesh Capitol Building, the Exeter Library, and he was Jewish, and... there's a whole element of the movie that's about...
Hi, I'm Ronnie. I'm 41 years old.
Hold
I'm
on for
father.
A second. Sorry.
I'm a graphic designer.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. My
oh
computer
my gosh.
Just unfroze oh after a half an hour. Go ahead.
Oh, well, that's good. So it's philosophical. It's beautiful. Ian Pei is interviewed.
Three families? I can't get past that.
Three.
I can't even deal with one family.
But this is part of the movie. This is part of what they're talking about. How can a man do that? And it's and what kind of mind does that? And plus he's making these buildings that are. It was in the modernist. He was designing in the sort of 40s and 50s.
How can someone put up with that much crap? I mean, I can't even imagine three
families.
Well, I
don't think that's the thing. I think he didn't put up with a lot of crap. And these women, they're interviewed, these three women, and then all the children. It is the most moving, interesting, beautiful. Plus, I mean, you know, here we are again with documentaries that are teaching us stuff. It's all about architecture, which I never think about. I walk around all day long. I don't look up. And people put, you know, it takes decades and sometimes hundreds of years to put a building up. And the minds that are behind that are quite interesting. And you know, you can receive huge acclaim and fame and importance from building a big, important, you know, monumental building. And he sort of didn't, because have you ever heard of Louis Kahn? Louis Kahn?
No, but he should get a medal just for putting up with three families, as far as I'm
right.
concerned.
Right, and this is his illegitimate son who's wandering around trying to find out about it. And it is, I'm telling you, it's a 10.
It's a 10. All right, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it this weekend.
I think you're going to love it.
I'm sold.
I think you're going to love it. So moving. There's a whole family part. The architecture is so interesting. It's beautiful.
Does it teach you
made.
How to juggle the three families? I mean, because I get the idea that maybe what you do is you keep them all three at arm's length, and that you know, it's easier to justify yourself.
Cause... Interesting, they were practically at arm's length. They were all living sort of blocks away from each other in Philadelphia.
Oh, my God.
Man, is this a good movie. It's so good. It's so good. And they go, he was, well, I'm not going to tell you, but it's a really good one. It's very moving, too. Moving, wow. Intellectual, interesting. It's not terribly long. I mean, I just loved it.
Wow. So My Architect, and that's on Netflix.
My Architect, tee it up right there on just press play. It's right there. I was nominated for an Academy Award.
I got to say, Isabel, you come through with some very good movies, I have to say.
I take it seriously.
I mean, I'm not surprised by that at all, but, I mean, you always deliver an excellent movie.
Thank you. Well, I got sort of waylaid because I saw A Room with a View sitting there, and just it came popping up because they thought I'd like it, and I love Room with a View.
Oh yeah,
I know. So I know that you'd snore at it. So it was took everything in my power to not watch it in my little, you know, time of watching movies, which I have 3 children, job. You know, I gotta to watch movies. I have to sort of carve out some time. I couldn't just.
You get a lot of time to watch movies. Come on.
Oh, when am I watching movies?
You're watching movies all the time.
Today I'm baking a cake for the auction. Are you?
No.
Are you even going to the auction?
We may.
This is a school's auction.
We have tickets. We're sort of
you
planning.
You may.
We might.
What kind of? That's not team playing. The auction's the most fun of the whole year.
You know, look, I don't know. We may go, we may not. I'm not sure. I don't, you know, we're not in a position where we're going to be doing any big bidding on stuff, so.
So you get the little stuff. You go, I'd love it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe eventually. But, I mean, you know, we got to ease into these things.
I have a shot of tequila, and then I go and do all the bidding. You
well, that's
can,
basically
you can
how
bid on.
So do just about everything these days now. Half in the bag.
You
gotta be. That's, unless I had 3 families, in which case then I could probably be.
Oh, you have to watch this movie. Will you promise me you'll watch
it? I'm gonna watch it.
It's supposed to rain all weekend.
Swear to God. I'm gonna watch it. Isabel Gillies. And somebody, please, how is it that somebody has not been inspired to send in a theme song for you? That's what shocks me.
What? You mean people could send it in and they haven't?
Well,
that sort of hurts my feelings.
Wow. All right, folks. See what you've done to her?
Wow.
All right. Well, when people
that's
are watching My Architect, they can think about how they've dissed you.
When My Architect is changing your life, maybe you could think of a little ditty for me.
All right.
A little song.
There you go. Isabel Gillies, ladies and gentlemen. IsabelGillies.com for more information.
Yeah.
All right, Isabel. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye, Sam.
Bye, Isabel. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to head into the better half of the program, wherein, we do have a Jimmy Reefcake song. We'll take your phone calls. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We'll be taking your IMs. Got a pretty funny story about a right-winger who tries to do those ambush videos. Didn't work out so well for him. And there's like a little intra-scene right-wing war between James O'Keefe and a woman who used to work for him who alleges she's alleging that he tried to molest her or drug her or something. I'm not quite sure on that. Who knows, but it's always fun to watch. Also, 2-year anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. Talk about that. Oh, and you may not know this,
but Hezbollah is all around us.
Oh, and I've got some good name drop names for Name Drop Friday. Names like
Darren Aronofsky,
who apparently is a... I didn't realize how much success he had. I mean, I saw Black Swan, but, you know, I don't know how to contextualize these things. Folks, please become a member of the Majority Report. It's your support that keeps this show alive. It's your support that will allow me to get a computer that actually will work, not turn on mysteriously in the middle of the show, freeze up a moment before the show, lug this monster around. You can also support the show by buying your Amazon junk through our Amazon link at majorityreport.fm. Support the show. Why not give us a review on iTunes? Why not buy some merch? DonateYourAccount.com. There's so many different ways for you to support the show. You can check it out there. JustCoffee.coop, coffee, tea, chocolate, fair trade, organic if you want it. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. All right, folks, we'll see you in the... we'll be back at noon on Monday. See you then.